everybody. Welcome back to Good News York. We are here again at the great New York State Winter Fair at the Expo Center. And I'm telling you, if you're listening back to this,
well, you missed it.
You did.
It's over.
But I'll tell you, you missed a great time because between the fair food, the rides, the games, the vendors in the middle of February, I guess the start of February,
and you don't find this anywhere else. It's a blast.
And you don't have any weird smells from the humid dairy barn.
Right.
I love the dairy barn, but sometimes you catch a whiff. You don't have that here.
You never know what you're going to find at the fairgrounds. Joining us again is our returning champion.
Yes, he is.
Mark O'Donnell is back with
us. Mark O'Donnell, we love you. Yes, this is, for those of you tuning in, Good News York going live in, I don't know, at this point, just a few days. For now, we're shooting episodes here at the Winter Fair, but it's a bit of a hybrid. It's a bit of an episode of Good News York, and then we're going to turn it over to Mark O'Donnell's podcast, Operations Excellence, and he's brought a guest with him today.
Mark, tell us who's your new friend here.
Yes, our second guest on Operations Excellence for our inaugural broadcast here.
I like that.
Is my good friend and co-owner of the River Edge Mansion Bed and Breakfast, John Sidorkis.
Welcome, John. Thanks for being here, man.
Thank you, Good News York and Mark and Operations Excellence.
That's awesome. Great. So glad to have you. So, Mark, tell us a little bit about what you and John do together. What do you work on?
Well, he's not a client.
Okay.
But he is a very interesting entrepreneur. And
that's our favorite type of guy.
Yeah. Local bed and breakfast owner. So I just thought he'd be very interesting for the guest. So, and by the way, very good news.
Yes.
Yeah, fits right with the content.
And I'll say, when I think of bed and breakfast, I'll be honest with you, I think of a quaint, nice place. This place is massive.
That is why it's called a mansion, I believe.
Well, yes, it's the River Edge Mansion, right. Correct. But, you know, at first, when you first hear it, you think, oh,
sure.
Bed and breakfast.
No,
that's cute.
I agree.
This is
you.
Amazing. Amazing. Tell us a little bit about the history of the River Edge Mansion. I love this.
Sure. So the River Edge Mansion, known as the Schroeppel's Homestead, George Hasper Schroeppel purchased the property from Henry Scribo. He purchased 25,000 acres from Henry Scribo in 1818.
Wow.
Now, Henry Scribo, as you all know, pretty much owned most of the land north of the Oneida River and Oswego River. So he was a huge real estate owner. So George Schroeppel and Henry were also business associates. They had an engineering firm that they worked for. But George bought this property and proceeded to build a mill. So this property is right on the Oneida River, part of the Erie Canal. So George proceeded to build a mill on the river, and that mill, they built a temporary house on the property, and while they constructed the mansion, which took them 5 years.
Right.
So the intricate craftsmen in the house is just off the hook.
Hmm.
So the original house was 1818. In 1829, they put on an addition, and the house was actually owned by and lived in by the Schroeppels until 1933.
Oh, wow.
And since then, it's changed ownership multiple times. And in the 80s, there's a couple named the Stories who bought the home and did a ton of work to it because it had been let go.
Wow.
And the Stories actually did some great work, things that you don't see, but all the infrastructure that you need in a very old house. And so they had it for many years, and my wife and I bought this in 2021.
Oh, wow.
We shut down for about 3 months because it needed some significant work. Prior owners really didn't have the time and money to put towards it.
Right.
So, so we've been up and running since April of 2022.
Congratulations.
Oh, that's incredible.
That's amazing.
So we were running on the screen behind us here a loop from HGTV.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that experience? And
sure, it was awesome. We were approached by a real estate broker locally, and they had asked us if we would like to be engaged with them. They had just bought some licensures for upstate New York. Would we like to be, you know, in their premiere that they're running for upstate New York?
Right.
And so, yeah, we agreed, and the filming, you know, took place in November, and we kicked off 15th of December. And it was really just a great, great experience. And the folks with American Dream TV and the real estate team, just awesome.
And having been at the mansion and in the mansion myself a number of times, I thought the shoot they did a great job capturing really how beautiful it is, both inside and out. I mean, the interior woodworking, if you're into that, is stunning. You don't see that any,
right?
In the ceilings and I mean, right down to the doors. It's unbelievable. So where is it located for our listeners again?
Yeah, so we are located in Pennaville, New York, which is in the town of Schroeppel. So for those of you local, we are directly across the Oneida River from Clay.
Mm.
So Morgan Road, if you were to run Morgan Road to the river and go over the Schroeppel Bridge, if you look to the left, we are immediately there on your left.
Wow. Fantastic. Awesome. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and your wife, Rebecca? Hi, Rebecca. She's sitting off to the side here. Great to see you. About your backgrounds and your decision to buy the River Edge. How'd you get there?
So Beck and I mean, I am a lifelong food and beverage hospitality guy. I mean, I started in the business as a dishwasher and ended up with an executive for Compass USA.
Wow.
And since leaving Compass, I'm a consultant in the hospitality, food and beverage industry. Rebecca is a chef, culinary grad from Sullivan SUNY.
Wow.
And Rebecca's worked as one of the chefs at the Brewster Inn, Link Lane House, and so forth over the years, as well as Taz College when it was operating.
Wow.
And Rebecca and I met. We got married. We lived together for many years and got married in June of 21. And we ended up buying River Edge, signed the contract in October 21. The thought with this was me being active in beverage and hospitality. This is something that would complement us both.
Yeah.
Rebecca really runs the day-to-day business as I'm working.
Sure.
In the food and beverage industry. We both do this together, obviously. And Rebecca does all the meals. Rebecca's a pastry chef. So, you know, when you stay at River Edge, what we're really shooting for here is what I like to call, and there's a book written about it, unrealistic hospitality.
Okay. I
mean, what does that mean? That means creating an event, creating an intimate remembrance and memory that you have.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, some of our guests will have, you know, welcoming charcuteries as they arrive. They might have some champagne or some wine with chocolate dipped strawberries, fresh roses in the room. You know, we have packages for whatever you like.
That's great.
That stuff, you know, all of that stuff matters.
Yeah.
Those little details are so important. I worked, before this, I worked in the hospitality industry for a very long time as a bartender server. And I wish everybody would at least once. You learn a lot. You really do. You learn a lot about work ethic and people in general.
Yeah.
But there were little things like I would walk in, for instance, on a Friday night to come in as the night bartender, relieving the day bartender. and they've got like a cooking show on the TV because the game that they had been playing was off, and they've got music, like heavy metal music playing, and I'm thinking, it's dinner, right? And people are sitting at the bar, they want something to look at, like what channel the television is on and what music is playing, that matters in that situation. Yeah. I mean, it's a little different for you, but I'm just saying, in that situation, that matters. So I love that you talked about that.
Devil's in the details in the restaurant business. So just to mention, I grew up in a family-owned restaurant in New Jersey. My father passed away when I was 19. I left college with my brother, and we ran that 300-seat restaurant, which had a cocktail lounge and banquets. It was a large operation. We ran that for another 8 years.
Wow.
And then
the name of that was
Sleepy Hollow Inn.
And I love that name.
And it was located in Scotch Plains, New Jersey.
Oh,
that's incredible.
That's great. So...
So I wanted to ask you this question, and you sort of already answered it, talking about, you know, what's so unique about your place. But I'd love to hear, aside from the customer experience, what brings people to your spot versus anywhere else?
So they're looking for elegance, history. History is a huge thing since we're a registered landmark.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And when you walk through River Edge, man, as Mark already alluded to, the craftsmanship on the cornices and all the doorways and all the moldings is off the hook. The main living room has an original tin ceiling in it.
Oh, wow.
The dining room is all cherry, including the ceiling. So all the wainscoting is cherry.
Incredible.
We have five fireplaces in the mansion. You know, our suites have jacuzzis, hot tubs.
Wow.
And we cater to people. So when you come and you stay, in addition to some of the things I mentioned, if you wanted a welcome charcuterie board or, you know, a sweetheart package or something like that, we deliver morning beverages to your room. And in some cases, you know, some of our guests want breakfast delivered to their room. We do offer a 3-course breakfast, and everything is fresh and locally purchased.
Amazing. And Mike,
if I could throw this in here, if you love that period of time, Christmas, the way they deck out that mansion at Christmas time, both inside and out, and I know Becca does a ton of work. How many Christmas trees do you have?
Three
Christmas
That's
trees.
A lot.
And with that portico pillared front, I mean, it's lit up. It's decorated. It's gorgeous.
Amazing.
It makes you feel like Christmas.
Yes. Yeah. Matt Mazur, Mike Rindisi, Good News York here at the Winter State Fair with, of course, Mark O'Donnell, the Operations Excellent podcast, which we're also on right now. And our guest, John Segorkis of the River Edge Mansion Bed and Breakfast. John, I got two questions I thought of. One, would you say you're... your bread and butter are weddings and events, or is it couples looking to get away? Is it more of a 50-50, a little bit of both?
Great question, because one of the things that I saw from this property when we bought it was there was no space to do an event.
Mm.
Now, we've done dinners for, we could do a sit-down dinner for up to 30 in the mansion, but that's it. Since we have docks, and on the docks we have an arbor, we do a lot of wedding ceremonies right on the docks.
Oh, wow.
And
that's
we get
awesome.
To see 70 people on that dock for a ceremony.
That's incredible.
So one of the things this past year, it's funny you ask, but we just invested a lot of money. We cleared a half an acre of property so that we have parking on site.
That's huge.
You know, for up to 70 cars. And we built an outdoor event space, 5,000 square foot, so that we can host a 40 by 90 event tent, which could, you know, really feasibly do a wedding, a sit-down wedding for easily 150 people.
Wow. That's
incredible. So great question.
That's huge.
And then how many actually rooms do you have there for folks to stay on the
property?
We
have three full suites. The mansion's large. We have three full luxurious suites.
Wow.
And they, you know, They're all very intimate.
Uh-huh.
In 2023, we were voted one of the top 10 most romantic bed and breakfasts in the U.S.
That's
by I Love Inns, who is one of the largest bed and breakfast databases in the country.
That's incredible. Do you find that these, I don't want to say the name, I don't want to advertise, do you find that they're the vacation rental services? You know what I mean? I guess I could say it, right? Airbnb, VRBO. Is that competition for you, or does that help you? Do you work with them?
So we're not on VRBO. There's certain regulations with VRBO. If you know, we've had multiple people who want to rent the house for a week.
Mm.
Yeah.
We're not set up to do that at the moment.
Sure.
That might be something we might do if we move off property, because we're on property.
Yeah.
But your question is great. We don't necessarily, the Airbnb folks might not want to pay what it costs to stay at our place. Yes. However, VRBO folks definitely would. And we do get a lot of them.
Awesome.
We've had people stay for 7 to 10 days. You take up 2 or 3 suites.
Just real quick, you mentioned earlier the kind of the history of the place and the size, the acreage of it. Is that the size today, or how much actual property is it today?
Today it is 5.8 acres.
Wow. Okay.
And we have a 600-700 foot of riverfront.
Wow.
And we have nature trails, which one of the things that I focused on, cleaning them up and making them usable.
That's one arm. I love to hear that. That's really the experience, you know. It's get away from the cities, get something nice, and kind of feel that nature is what I think more people need to do.
When I mentioned unrealistic hospitality, it's about the experience we're trying to create.
And it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like a lot of your guests are, that is kind of the whole trip, right? Is coming to the mansion and relaxing and
correct.
Not necessarily going to an event in town sort of thing or anything like that.
A lot of it is respite, where people just need to want to shut off.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we have obviously in all the rooms, there's, you know, cable
sure.
and so forth. But
yeah,
most people, I got to tell you, a lot of them don't even want to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
Nah, they just kind of want to get away.
No, that's wonderful. So we give it out, and of course it'll be where we post this. It'll be where folks can link it. But so we know, and I'm saying it, I should be looking at it.
RiverEdgeMansion.com.
He's got it right there.
Yeah,
right
that's
there.
It.
He's all over it.
River Edge Mansion Bed and Breakfast in Pennellville, New York, 1 County Route 10. And it is RiverEdgeMansion.com. And it is, you can see it behind us, but we're not just saying this because that's what's trendy. It's absolutely gorgeous.
It's a gorgeous property.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Absolutely.
And is this kind of your, you know, you talked about all the different projects and things like that. Is this going to be kind of your retirement project? Is it going to be the mansion? Or do you, you look like a guy who's got 5 other business ideas in his head as we speak.
That's a good catch right there.
I'm just curious.
My mind's constantly going.
As somebody with that old problem, like, I'm trying to figure out if that ever goes away or not.
It was a good mix. One of Rebecca's childhood dreams was, obviously, she went to, you know, culinary school and is the executive chef. One of her dreams growing up was to own a bed and breakfast on the water.
Okay.
And, you know, we got married in June, and here I am signing a contract for this place
That's
in October.
It.
Wow, dreams come true and fast.
Hey.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love that you guys, you said you came from a background of hospitality, correct?
Yeah. Correct.
And so did she. And I want to reiterate that for those listening or watching, because I know so many friends, acquaintances, people that have just said, I fell into some money. I think I'm going to open a restaurant. And they have no experience. And I'm not saying that can't work. But you know, I think a lot of the reason for your early success is because you came from that. And there's no school for it. I mean, yes, there's a culinary school.
Knew how to do it right from the beginning.
But to own and operate a restaurant in the hospitality industry or a business in that, it's much more than just knowing how to cook. I respect that tremendously.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure I said that.
I'll just throw one quick in here. So my father was an off-the-boat Greek. My father was born on the island of Chios.
Wow, okay.
And as you guys are probably familiar with New Jersey, You know what happens when two Greeks meet on a corner? The next day there's a diner.
I'm glad you said that. It's not one of us.
Well, wait, let me ask you this, John. There's been this long-standing argument between the Greeks and the Italians. I'm a Brindisi. Okay, he's a Segorkis. We're gonna breaking. We're gonna figure it out right here, right now. Good News York, Operation Excellence. Who invented the pizza? Was it the Greeks or the Italians?
Oh, wow.
I think that's an Italian thing.
Oh, my God. Wow. Yeah, you heard it.
You didn't just say that because you're on the
podcast. No. I think that's accurate.
That's a big argument. Okay.
I believe it.
I'm filing that.
You heard it here
first.
You heard
it from John.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Even though the Greeks would want to take.
Sure. And they make great pizza.
So, Mark, real quick, you mentioned you've been old friends, and you and John go way back. Where did you first connect, or how do you two interact?
I would just say through mutual friends, and I will tell you a little story about John, and he can comment on this. John played quite a bit of competitive golf up into his mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
Right? Wow. Oh, wow.
And I can play. I'm a pretty decent golfer. The first time I played with John and he hit a driver, I just went,
oh, boy. I love golf, so.
Yeah, when he's on, he can legitimately hit a 300-yarder.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
What can't you do?
So,
it's coming up roses.
But tell this. I mean, this is a little bit of a personal story, but I think it's interesting. You told me the story one day on the golf course about what happened when you decided I'm done with competitive golf.
Oh, yeah.
Tell that story.
So you got to know, as a very young kid, working in that family-owned restaurant, the other piece was I love golf. And there was a golf course generally across the street, a caddy quarter across the street from the restaurant. So I got a job to pick up the range. And then with that, I wouldn't get paid. I could hit as many balls as I wanted.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I would also caddy there.
Okay.
And I could make some money there as well. So I was in and around, and from a young age, I was taught by one of the best golf pros that came out of New Jersey. His name was Babe Lachartis. And Babe won 5 New Jersey State PGAs.
Wow.
2 or 3 New Jersey State Opens. Went and, played the normal PGA. Anyways. So I began playing competitively from about the age 12 and to 28. And I was trying to qualify for, I think it was probably the New Jersey State Open. And I shoot at 80. I come home, I throw my clubs in the closet, and I said, I'm done. And I didn't look at him for 5-6 years.
I do that every time I go golfing. It's funny. When I was growing up, I had friends that were on the golf team in high school, and we were like, ha, ha, what a bunch of losers. That's boring. Now I'm calling them all the time, like, how do I hit a flop shot? So I appreciate anyone. And, you said you didn't get paid. You kind of did, because it made you a better golfer getting to hit that many balls. I love that so much.
I was fortunate enough to have some great teachers around me. As Arnold Palmer says, golf, the most rewarding, yet most maddening game that God ever created.
God, is that the truth?
Amen.
I could see that.
Yeah. So whenever I'm looking at entering a captain and crew event, John's my anchor man.
He's your ringer.
He's my anchor man. So
you're the guys that always show up at the tournaments. You get in the clubhouse, you're like, I think we did good. We shot, 4 under, and they're like 20 under.
Yeah.
And they're like, who are these guys?
I will say one thing. To score in those tournaments, you have to make putts. So
yeah, that's all of it. Drive for show, putt for dough.
Which we have found out on occasion at some point.
Indeed.
I do want to take a minute to ask John a couple of questions, because I know you mentioned, Matt, you could just tell John's a type of guy that's got 10 different things going on at once. And he is. And I know he's got some other things consulting in his world that he's looking at and working on. So why don't you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, so mine, I was with Compass up until April last year, took a few months off.
Compass does?
Compass Group USA, I apologize. The largest commercial dining service company in the world.
Oh, wow.
And they're based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. I worked for them 8 years. I was a vice president, client activation, all their new business, in healthcare and senior living came to my responsibility to open that business wherever there was new piece of business. Wow. Anyways, since I left them, I took a few months off, and I was reached out to by a private equity company, people that I knew, and they asked me to come work for them on a consultant basis. They're food and hospitality focus.
I see.
So they invest in other
typically small
food and beverage companies. They also have just really, actually, I helped them. Part of what I did was to help them go live with their new company. They started a new senior living dining company, and that's called Restora Hospitality Group.
Wow.
And that went live in October of this year. So I've been doing a lot of consulting for them, helping them build out a standard operating procedure.
Sure.
And, you know, how do we deliver that to the customer, all the things that go in between? So focus on the best hospitality programs and training that we could put forth. And, you know, how do we put them into action? So not only from a dining perspective, from a kitchen operation perspective, but when you think about it, it all ties back to what Mark really focuses on. It's got to be the culture.
Right.
There has to be a culture from the top that drives. And I could tell you that the gentleman who runs this private equity firm is all that.
Awesome. That's really neat.
Yeah.
So I do, I'm out there and I do, you know, consulting for other companies as well. So.
Gotcha. That's incredible. You traveling a lot? Do you stay mostly in the area, or?
It depends on what the need is. You know?
Gotcha.
I mean, if I need to travel, I travel.
Sure.
I spent many years on the road as an regional operations manager.
Yeah.
Regional vice president for, you know, I've also worked for a company called Aramark.
Okay.
So some of the larger groups, the way I got to upstate New York was that I was hired as vice president of dining for American Food Invented.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so that's how kind of I got to New York.
I see.
And never left. Yeah. I love it here.
It's a great place.
Ladies and gentlemen, forget Dos Equis. This is the most interesting man in the world, yes. I think. This guy, you're incredible. Just incredible. John, I wanted to say real quick, too, something that I want to point out that I don't think anyone probably got. You pride yourself on, you guys are ADA compliant, yeah, which I think is an important note. I have a friend who's disabled, and he gets around in a wheelchair. He drives himself. I think it's great to, that's an important point to note that, River Edge Mansion is ADA compliant as well. So thank you for that.
Yeah, man, we've had multiple customers come, awesome. You know,
that's great.
That unfortunately they have to live in this house.
Right.
Sure.
Right. That's great.
It's great. So you got a place to serve them.
Yeah.
My buddy, John, I will throw this one out there to you. What's the future? You know, what's the next couple of years look like for you and Rebecca, and what's going on?
We would love to do some more weddings. You know, since we built that outdoor event space just this past year, and we finished that outdoor event space in August. And by the way, it's level, it's 5,000 square feet, and we used recycled artificial turf.
Oh, wow.
One of the reasons we did that was, A, when you think about an event outdoor, and it's real, this might be crazy to you guys, it's in the details.
Sure.
Women wear spike heels.
Yeah.
You can't penetrate artificial turf in spike heels.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That is amazing, man.
That's great.
So, what? I mean, that was one of the driving factors.
This goes back to why you've been so successful. Details, and you don't think of that stuff unless you've worked.
No, but you know what? I can think of a number of different outdoor venues, outdoor weddings where women have talked about that issue. You know,
100%.
It's great at the grass, but it's just a little soft and doesn't work well for walking in fancy shoes.
No.
You know,
no.
So that's great.
That's awesome. Do you, as a successful entrepreneur, do you have any thoughts for entrepreneurs out there, especially in the restaurant world? Maybe some things that you would throw out to them if they asked you, what should I do?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the restaurant business, some of the statistics out there over the years is 10 restaurants open this year. In 5 years, there's one left.
Right.
It's a very difficult piece of business because you have to be married to it if you want to be successful.
That's right.
And if you want to be an absentee manager, you'll lose all your money.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's truth because it just has to be managed. And, you know, there's very tight margins in the food and beverage industry. So you have to manage the margins on a day-to-day basis.
That's the thing. It can get out of control real quick, right? You make a mistake or you don't pay attention, and before you know it, you can't come back.
Sure. And so many restaurants, you know, they invest money to get it started and so forth, and they have their operating capital. That operating capital is really gold.
Yeah.
And anything you spend money on, you really have to be really focused on what you're putting that towards, specifically wages. You know, when you get people into overtime and stuff like that, and it happens. We all deal with it, right? But you really just have to be focused on it every day, every shift.
Yeah.
The bread and butter, that's how you're going to deliver profit.
Right.
Just managing all those details.
I've seen, I don't know how many restaurants of people talk about that they put everything into the remodeling the place and doing all this and getting it open. And they don't have any cushion. So if they don't absolutely knock it out of the park on opening day, they're in trouble.
They're behind the eight ball.
Yeah. I think, you know, what you're talking about. Do you have a recommendation? You know, you hear different things, and some of it's whether or not it's realistic or not. But in terms of if you were opening something new, how much cushion would you like to have? You know, I've heard people talk about try to have a couple months of salary in the bank, which is often, I don't know, not necessarily realistic. But, you know, what would be your advice for that sort of thing?
You should have operating capital 6 months.
6 months, okay.
If you're gonna try and go in, it depends on the size of the restaurant.
Yeah.
Depends on how many employees you
have.
Sure, right.
But, I mean, after all said and done, your place is open, you better have 6 months worth of operating capital. It's no different from thinking about your home emergency fund, right?
Oh, it's the same deal,
Because, God forbid, you know, in our business, you live and die by your last meal that you serve.
Right.
You know, Absolutely. And you have a great meal, you're going to touch 12 people, directly or indirectly. You have a bad meal, you're going to touch 25 directly or indirectly. So that's just some statistics from our business.
Wow.
No, that's great. I really appreciate that. I've heard similar things like that, but it makes a lot of sense. And when you see it, that's kind of the point of a lot of what we've been talking about is the bad news, negative things, controversy gets more traction than the positive.
Right.
In all aspects. And I could definitely see why that's the case. That's why so many businesses are so obsessed with reviews these days. Please go on and review us and give us 5 stars. It's a challenge.
Absolutely.
You know, I think my thoughts on the reviews, you know, you love and hate them, right?
Yeah.
We are better. We have not had a negative review in 3 years.
That's great.
Which at River Edge, which is great. Amazing. And that's on Google, TripAdvisor, all of them. But I got to tell you, you have to manage that too.
Sure.
Now, and you have to manage experiences. Like if we didn't live up to somebody's experience, man, I need to be doing something to ensure that that never happened for you.
Right.
Right. And so we learn, you know, our mistakes bring on the wisdom, right? And we have to be proactive. I think you always have to be proactive in everything you do in your business.
I think that's great.
If we're in a reactive mode, puts you in a bad spot.
You're already kind of behind at that point, right?
You're putting out fires and you're not getting ahead, right? And it's unfortunate that in many businesses, not just hospitality, that's the case,
right?
People spend 80-90% of their time putting out fires. They're never moving the ball ahead.
Yeah.
They're treading water at best, usually falling back. It's a trap.
That's definitely universal. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. That's good advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, my friend John, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on. Awesome.
Thanks so much, Mark.
John, we've really enjoyed you as well, and it's great. Thank you so much, Mark, for bringing him, and thank you for being here yourself as well.
My pleasure, and thank you guys.
Matt Mazur, Mike Brindisi of Good News York, here with the great John Sikorkis, River Edge Mansion Bed and Breakfast, It's on 1 County Route 10 in Pendleville, New York, RiverEdgeMansion.com. Again, RiverEdgeMansion.com. And, of course, the great Mark O'Donnell of Operations Excellence.
I don't know about the great part, but thank you for that.
Oh, I think so. Thank you guys so much for this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you guys so much.
Well, we'll be back with some more.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Good News York.
Yes.
We are here live once again, live recording, obviously, at the great New York State Fairgrounds at the Winter Fair. This is a very exciting event. There are people everywhere. And we actually have some guests.
We do.
So joining us on the program for the very first time is our buddy Mark O'Donnell.
Oh, hey, guys.
Anyway, awesome. Mark, tell us a little bit about who you are, and then if you wouldn't mind, please introduce your own guest.
Yeah, so my company is Operations Excellence. Been around for a little over 3 years now. My focus is leadership development and organizational development, right? So done a lot of work with some companies developing their next generation of leaders, strategic planning, team building, one-on-one coaching. Been a lot of fun. What I tell people now is when I'm actually working with clients, it's not work.
Yeah.
Right. It's just such a, it's a rush to see people see the switch go on and to see them seize these concepts and just run with it.
Right.
And see them achieve the results. Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, by the way, before we go too much further, I want to thank you, Matt, and Mike, for putting this together. This is awesome.
Awesome.
And we talked a handful of months ago about this idea, and I don't think you finished the sentence before I said I'm in.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you, because you're exactly the type of a person that we love working with. So you made it really easy.
We're excited to have you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun ride.
It sure is.
So let me introduce
my first
guest, the guy to my right, who, as we were joking before you started recording, is not only quite a bit younger than me, but much better looking, and that's all good. So this is Derek Brooks. Derek is the operations manager for RB Woodcraft, who happens to be a client of mine. And Derek and I actually have been friends for, I guess, 4+ years now. So
I'd say about that.
Okay.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, thanks for being here. We're welcome.
We're so glad to have you. So, gentlemen, this is the new podcast that we've started called Good News York. And this is kind of a fun thing that we're doing. So, as you know, we've put together this business growth mode content to make podcasts, to make content for all their businesses like yourself. But at the same time, since we've got the resources and the talent, we wanted to do something that was kind of for the public, I guess you would say. So Good News York is exactly that. So the idea behind this show is nothing but positivity. So we're not talking about crime. We're not talking about controversy, things of that nature. We're talking about everything that's great about New York State and the people in it and the businesses, jobs, things of that nature. So we're really glad to have you here as some of our first guests live at Winter Fair. At this awesome environment, and I will tell the people that are listening or watching that it won't always be this lively. We actually spent a stupid amount of money to build a big, beautiful studio, and our first recordings are at the fairgrounds.
Yeah,
but you know, sometimes that's how it goes. But
just willing to take a chance, right?
Yeah. That's it.
Don't come with Good News York, but
yeah.
But you are our first guest, so we're really, really excited about this. And welcome to the show. You're the first guest on Good News York.
Well, I'm honored. I hope I don't bomb it for you.
Oh,
well,
stop.
You know.
No.
That's the beauty of podcasts. We can create a edit. We can actually make you say anything, Mark. So you got to really.
Uh-oh. I better be nice.
You should be real careful. Yeah.
We can slap a filter on your face, turn you into a dinosaur. We can,
I forgot. You guys are the techno people.
So you know what's funny is we actually have a potential client who wants to do a podcast where they can speak freely and they don't want their identity. So they actually are going to, we're talking about recording just the audio, like a traditional version of a podcast that is no video, right?
Oh,
it's just audio. But we can put on top of that an AI-generated video that basically turns them into cartoons.
That's amazing.
Wow.
So there can still be a video portion, but you won't actually see these folks.
I got excited. I thought we were going to do like the, you remember like the old Dateline episodes where the person would get
They would have the boys.
I love that idea.
Yeah, I thought that's where we were going.
We got to do that.
Always wanted to do that.
The shadowy guest that
Change
I remember the voice. They don't do that anymore, do they? That was an old school thing. This guy doesn't even remember that. Like, I'm way too young for that stuff.
He's too young. Yeah.
So, Mark, let's jump into a little bit of you and what you do and how you work with, you know, all these different businesses like RB Woodcraft and others.
Well, why don't we do this? I'll give you a kind of a synopsis of what I've done with RB Woodcraft, and then I'm going to maybe transition into asking Derek some questions.
Absolutely.
So I think you and I started a conversation probably about 2+ years ago initially. The premise initially of the conversation, I believe, was strategic planning, but also looking at the succession plan as part of that. With your dad, who is the founder of the company, looking at transitioning out, right? And so that's how the conversation started. I want to say, I don't know, 6 months or so back and forth. You guys had a lot of other initiatives going on, right?
Yeah.
And I think initially you brought me in for strategic planning was the first project we worked on. Great group. It was Derek, his dad Ray, who is the owner and founder, his brother Drew, and the CFO of the company, Joe McGlynn. And so they did a great job. Basically, I facilitated walking them through a very detailed strategic planning process. They developed a very strong plan with very detailed action items. And of course, like most plans, there was some audibles through the course of the following year, but the smart thing Ray, his father, did is right at the end of the initial strategic planning process, he said, well, we'd like to hire you to come in and run our monthly management review meetings to make sure we implement the plan, which... Like, usually that's the one that is prompting the client to do that. He asked me before I even went down that road. His dad is an extremely smart entrepreneurial guy. Right?
Sure.
So that's also been something I've done with them. I've actually taken his younger brother, Drew, who is the sales manager, through a one-on-one leadership development program. And we were just talking when Derek got here today offline. It's been fun to watch, right? Because his brother was kind of at the perfect place in his life and his career, and he was a sponge, right? So when you get somebody like that, it's not working. I mean, it's just giving them the tools, giving them the chance to develop them, and the benefit of my experience and watching him run from there. So fast forward now, we've gone through the second year of strategic planning this past fall. So they have a strategic plan coming into 25. I'll be facilitating their monthly management meeting again this year. And we just started a leadership development program with it's Derek and 5 of his next level frontline managers through leadership development, right? Because what was one of the things we determined as we talked about succession planning is as Ray has stepped out slowly of the business, Derek and his brother Drew are taking more and more of the executive roles, right? Well, they need to step out of the day-to-day role somewhat that they've been basically running the day-to-day operations. And so now it's about building up that next generation. So in a synopsis, that's kind of a great little microcosm of some of the primary things I do with businesses.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So it's been so much fun because, you know, last year they knocked it out of the park. I mean, they had a great year and they're positioned well for a lot of success going forward. So without further ado, let me ask you a little bit more about, you can tell the listeners about RB Woodcraft, how long it's been around, what the primary business is. I turn it over.
So RB Woodcraft was founded in 1983 by Ray Brooks, started in his garage. He actually built enclosures for the uh,
You're famous, Mark.
I know.
We have to get security over
He's
here.
More popular than any of us. Like,
he's so good looking, people can't even let him speak on a podcast.
Right? Wait, I thought you were Italian. Only the Irish got Blarney like that.
So back to RV. So we were founded in the early 80s by my father. It started in his garage, and he grew it now to about 65 employees. We service the hospitality, medical, restaurant industry. So when you walk into a hotel like a Marriott Courtyard, everything you see, whether it's the cabinets, the bars, check-in desks, we do that full service. So it could be from here. Our farthest job this year was in Hawaii.
Wow.
So if you had to take one word, would it be millwork?
I would say millwork, yeah.
Is that everything 100% custom, or is there kind of some main product lines, I guess you would say, sort of thing?
Yeah, I would say like every hotel has their generation, right? So they come out with this generation, and the architects that's running that project, they'll follow that to some degree.
I see.
So they're the same but different.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
How do you find that type of work? Is it just a matter of you've been around so long in the industry that's... kind of you got the reputation that goes with it? Is that where you do that sort of thing?
Yeah, I would say a lot of the work finds us. And we also have a lot of partners that we work with. So general contractors and stuff that we've been working with for a long time. We take care of them and they send us their work.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been good.
Is it mostly commercial that you deal with, or do you do residential as well?
So we're 99% commercial. We did one job this year that was for a client. It owns the company down in Siesta Key, Florida, and it was challenging.
Man,
it's a whole different animal, right?
I feel so bad. You have to go to Hawaii and Siesta Key, Florida. You poor thing.
It's horrible. I got to go to Texas tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. Especially this time of year.
I know.
Exactly.
I know.
So if you wouldn't mind, and I know, Mark, you've got a couple questions for you, but I'm just kind of curious, and I think this is a great opportunity. Derek, can you explain to us what Mark does for you?
It's a great question.
I like
that. That is a good question. So I think when you think about a consultant, right, you bring someone on, they kind of show you what to do, right? But I think what Mark offers for us, at least, is his background, his experience, and also he's kind of getting into the trenches with us, right? So he understands where we want to go, so he's prying that out of us. But then he's meeting with us, and we have a lot of offline calls and stuff about asking how it's going. You know, so it's a great sounding board outside of the business to tell us, you know, what we should do differently.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
I think that's just incredible.
To interject, you know, one of the words that I use with clients, potential clients, is accountability,
mm-hmm.
right? It's that, because it's one thing to be accountable to each other in the business, but at that senior level, to have an outside person
to kind of
additionally be accountable to, that's a value I bring to a bunch of clients.
I can tell you in my own business, there are so many things that I do for other clients that I'm great at, and I can do it with great efficiency and come up with all these things. And when it comes time to do the same things in my own business, it's like paralyzing. So I can definitely see the value in kind of having an external party give you that assistance that you're not going to get kind of from the inside, you know?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things I use as almost a tagline is most business owners like yourself, Matt, and executives spend so much time working in the business day to day, right, that they don't have the time or focus to work on the business.
Yeah.
Right. And that's some of the value I bring.
Let me ask, if you don't mind, are there certain types of industries or companies that you target, or do you just say, hey, it's across the board, any type of industry I can take on? And if so, has there been one that was a little bit out of your comfort zone that you'd never done before?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you would have asked me back in the fall of 21 when I started the business, who would be most of my clients, I would have said manufacturing.
Right.
That's where I spent most of my adult life, sure. Right? And that's why it's actually a lot of fun working with RB Woodcraft, because they're a local manufacturer, right? And I lived it, breathed it, ate it for 3 decades, right? But I don't really have a script type of company or industry. I think it's more about the people that are running it, right? Like, are they really sincere and open-minded to be engaged with somebody
right,
from the outside? Because I spent a lot more time sitting at their seat than I have spent in the seat I'm sitting in now. And I get it, right? There's a certain amount of, I guess, maybe underlying fear that if I have to go outside, you know, I should know this, or I should be able to do this without a consultant, right? So it takes some courage. Right? So it's really about the people. And honestly, I won't say I would never do business with a large corporation, because I've worked for and in a few of them. But I do shy away a little bit, only because I really want to work with like one or two decision makers.
That's right.
Right. I don't want to have to deal with a chain of command that takes 6 months to make a decision.
Yeah.
It's just too impossible to get anything done.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I'd like to turn back to my buddy Derek here. So tell us a little bit and maybe more detail for the folks that might not understand what millworking is, what manufacturing and the value that you guys bring from the manufacturing side of your business.
Sure, yeah. So for millwork for us, right, people think it's just some old Geppettos working in a plant, right? You know, carving some stuff out. And, you know, why this interests me is because it's not that, right? You know, in our plant, we deal with engineers, we deal with CNCs, robotics, right? Our industry is going through this thing which is called Industry 4.0. So we went through all the different industrial revolutions now, right? So now in the world that we live in, right, we're talking about AI. That's how we run part of our company now, right? We're talking about CNC robots to cut parts out, right? We got guys that work for us that program them. You know, half the people in our office are in their 20s, right? Because they understand how these new things work. So that's what makes our job kind of fun.
And you grew up in the business,
right?
So how old were you when you first actually worked in the business?
So legally 17 was when I was on the books, right? So, but I can't say that my dad wasn't having me sweep before then the floors.
Right.
But yeah, I grew up in the industry. So my first jobs were just working in the plant. And then once I graduated high school, I spent a couple of years on the road. So every week I'd be flying out to different job sites and reinstalling. So I was all over the country. And then after a couple of years of that, I was kind of like, you know what? I'm sick of traveling around. So I went to school for engineering, learned how to do that, and got really involved with either running the machinery or programming the machinery. And then I kind of worked my way up the ranks to production manager. Did that for a couple of years. Then I got into project management. And then I got heavy on the lean side. I got certified in Six Sigma. So that was fun running those projects and stuff like that. And then about 2 years ago, we parted ways with our operations manager. And then next thing you know, I'm running the operations for the company, baptism by fire, which was the best way to do it, though.
Right. But you literally worked your way up through the ranks and learned the business from the bottom up.
Yes.
Yeah. That's so refreshing to see. And it doesn't always happen with the second generation of ownership.
Right.
I think it's one of the many reasons it's fun to work. You guys are as much invested in the blood, sweat, and tears as your dad is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's so cool. So tell me why, and I know this because I've worked closely with you for a while now, why you love manufacturing.
I would say why I love it, because of the state that we're in right now with all of our technology. It's really fast-paced. Just our information technology alone, so our ERP system, is growing so fast that it's a full-time job just to keep learning and how to get better on that side of thing. And that's not even talking about manufacturing. That's just running the office side, the engineering side. So I think the world we live in nowadays is so fast-paced and so challenging. It always keeps you on your toes. So to me, that keeps me excited.
I've been really impressed with how RB Woodcraft goes above and beyond. So tell the audience a little bit about your approach, RB Woodcraft's approach to customer service. And
so we developed this slogan, actually two of them. One of them was when Mark was working with us, okay? But the first one we have is customer first thinking, all while respecting others. So to me, that's an easy way to think and talk to all of our employees is everything that we're doing, helping the customer, right? Internally and externally. We want to make sure we're always taking care of each other and people respect that. And the second thing that really kind of gets our brains twisted is the slogan that we developed was raving fans, right?
Yep.
We want everyone to say, hey, we want to work with them. So we want them to rave us.
That is awesome because I think you know this from conversations we've had with the group and you and I offline. There's a big difference between customer satisfaction and customer loyalty. And that raving fans goes directly to customer loyalty, right?
Yeah.
You want to build a long-term relationship based on trust.
Yeah.
Right? That's the home run.
It does. And there's a lot of work that comes behind that, a lot of grit, you know. You don't just develop that raving fan by just doing an okay job.
Right.
You know, it's picking the phone up on Sundays and answering the calls.
Right.
I had a client call me on Christmas Day.
Really?
You know, asking me how my job was going to be the next day. Is it shipping out?
Right.
Explain that to the girlfriend.
Yeah. That could be a little dicey on the home front, but that's what you're signing up for.
That's right. Right.
That's what it's about. You guys have built such a great team and I've gotten to know them even better now that we've started this next level of leadership development. And I think you've done some great things and the way you've gone about recruiting and hiring for the manufacturing side too. Can you talk a little bit about how you guys have built that team and continue to build that team?
Yeah, so for us, what I've seen is, at least what my employees tell me, is that it feels like a family culture, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone can come talk to you about anything, right? They trust you. And it's funny, we had a push going on at our shop, and I had to have guys work Saturday and Sunday after already being on overtime on Thursday, right?
Right.
And I had everyone on my manufacturing floor, besides probably one guy, show up on Saturday. Sunday, I had about 80%, you know, so that was telling.
Yeah.
We're doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you gave background instead of just saying it feels like family, because I think, unfortunately, that gets overused sometimes, but you did a great job defining it. Out of all the things that you guys have accomplished in the past few years, what makes you proudest?
I would say watching others grow, right? We've had some younger people kind of rise in the ranks, right? And it's a tough thing, you know, as a leader myself, to kind of let go of stuff and just hand that off to other people. But when people just show up and kind of go above and beyond and they take the initiative to do part of my role.
Right.
That's kind of telling.
Yeah. Yeah. You and having gotten to know the group a little bit better now in the last just few months, you've got a lot of leaders, even though they might not have the titles yet in some cases, but exactly what you described. They're always willing to take that next responsibility, you know, step in and volunteer to take on more. They're all in. Right. And that's the top.
Yeah. And I think leadership has to be built from the top down. Right.
Yep.
But it's got to feel it in their culture. Right?
Yep.
So there's been a lot of times where I had to roll my sleeves up and work with the guys on the floor. And, you know, they see that.
Yeah.
They respect that.
Yeah. You bring up another important word, but probably overused and understood: culture. So, and I think you guys have an amazing culture and you're highly focused on it on a daily basis. So tell us from your perspective, RB Woodcraft's approach to culture and what it is for RB Woodcraft and why it's important.
Yeah. So for us, if I were to sum it up, it's simplicity, right? So it's making everyone understand, you know, what is important. Right. So we break down for each team and department. You know, what does success look like for them, right? They want to know, are they winning or losing?
Right.
So on a daily basis, we all meet, we talk about it, and we celebrate. You know, that's how we create that family culture that we're talking about. There'd
right.
be several times when my dad comes in and he's cooking pancakes in the middle of our meeting, you know, just to thank the guys.
Right. Right. So everybody's in as far as knowing what's going on, winning or losing on a daily basis. And everybody is supportive of each other.
They are.
That is a great definition of a highly successful.
You know, and most people just want to know, Did I have a good day or a bad day? Am I doing the right thing? You know, that's what the most people want to know about.
Right.
They want to feel appreciated.
Right. Yeah. Right. How are we doing?
Yeah.
What do we need to do to succeed? Right.
And the best part is I don't even need to tell them anymore.
Right.
They know every day how they're doing.
Right. Because you've created that feedback loop. That's part of the culture. That's awesome. That is awesome. So in your vision, in your view, what's the future look like for RB Woodcraft next year, coming years?
So for us, right, we want to grow. We want to hit our sweet spot. So for us, it's we want to have enough people where we can create departments and department leads, so we'll have success, right? So I don't want to run around and run every department.
Right.
You know, I want to develop the next line of leaders, have them grow and run their team. Be able to rely on them to put up the training plans, to tell them they're being successful.
Right.
So the next couple of years, we want to see that happen.
Right. Where do you see RB Woodcraft 5-10 years down the road?
That's a great question. So for us, 5 to 10 years down the road, we're hoping to have strategic partners for every else work that we do.
Right.
We don't want to be bitten anymore. We want people to come to us on the sales side. And on the people and leadership side, we want our employees to say, this is the best place to work. Right? They want to bring on their friends to work there.
That's awesome. One thing I would like to get to, if you can circle back to the approach you guys took a few years ago, because you were finding a hard time finding qualified manufacturing staff that would stick around in the long term and work out for you. You guys did some great stuff.
Yeah, so our approach to that, we did a couple different ways. You know, we got in front of schools. We talked to our own employees to bring on family, friends, or people they knew in the industry. And that works a lot for what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also work with some refugee companies. And we found a lot of great guys that came in from Europe, from all different countries that had a background in millwork, woodworking, and all that stuff. It worked out pretty good.
Awesome. And some of these folks, English is a second language. And I know you guys are actually helping them learn English and actually, in some cases, trying to help them through the immigration.
We are, yeah. So we currently have to speak 6 different languages.
Wow.
So I know broken in 6 different languages. Most of it's the swear words they teach me, though.
That's what I learned. That's what you need to communicate, you know?
That's where it's at.
You got to start with the basics.
That's right.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Hey, Derek, do you mind if I just want to jump in real quick, if you don't mind. You mentioned something about strategic partnerships, and I think that's a really interesting thing. Could you just expand a little bit about, you know, you said you wanted to make partnerships for everything. I'd just love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so right now we got a couple of strategic partners that come to us with all their work, right? And we're trying to get more of their work. So it's either a general contractor, an ownership group, right? And what we found is they're hungry to have someone that's really going to be a full service, that's going to take care of them.
I see.
Right, so they want to know when they give us the project, we're not the headache, right?
Sure.
Every other trade is going to be the headache. But when the millwork's there, it's right, it's on time, and they can count on us.
And by doing that, you become just their go-to, right? So you're not hunting for work? Is that kind of the idea?
That's the goal.
You're just the natural part of their puzzle. Yeah,
we are.
Okay, cool. I love it. Thank you. Didn't mean to interrupt. I thought that was really interesting.
No competitive bid required, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, obviously in any bid-type business, the last thing you want to do is always be competing and have to be the lowest.
Yeah.
Right, cost persons.
No, I mean, we've got into that a little bit in our IT business, where instead of like government contracts, you can go directly to the government, or you can partner with these other folks who do all that heavy work.
Right.
And you can just take the piece that you do for them. And,
right.
And that's just it's a neat thing. And I think that's a great, great model that you're after.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. That's why it's so much fun to work with them.
They're a lot smarter than I am. So. That's incredible.
So maybe one last question would be, who is the sweet spot right now as you, and I know your brother handles the sales side, is looking to expand that partner base? And so what's the sweet spot for that next set of customers that become partners?
So surprisingly, we're finding that the restaurant business is booming. Yeah. You would think after COVID and all this stuff that it would kind of slow down, but it's going up really quick. And we found a couple of good players that are in that, and we're trying to go after them, you know?
That's great.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Do you have any questions for these two guys? Or?
No, I just want to say thanks for having us on. And
absolutely.
It's our pleasure. I mean, this is it's a unique situation. It's a hybrid. It's partly an episode of Good News York, and it's partly an episode of your podcast. Mark, did we come up with a name for your podcast yet?
Yeah, I think it's just Operations Excellence.
Operations Excellence.
I think that's perfect. Yeah. Which, so for those who don't know, is the name of his business.
Right.
Right.
And you know, we had this conversation previously. I think it's good. You don't have to overthink these podcast names. Well, like, that really says it.
This goes back to that conversation last week, Mike, when you said the same thing. I said, okay.
Yeah.
I'm good with not having to work any harder on it.
Right.
I mean, it's a win-win for you because not only is it a great name for a podcast, but you're essentially, every time those words come out of your mouth, we're advertising your business as well. So,
right.
You nailed it. Two birds with one stone. You know, you got a podcast name and the name of your business. So it's great for us to have you on the first episode of Good News York. And it's I'm so glad to have had you on for Mark's first episode of Operation Excellence. Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, and I'd like to thank you guys again. It's
thank you.
Again, been friends with Matt for, 3 years almost now. And Mike, I think in our first 5 minutes of conversation, I'm like, wow, this guy's good. I like
it.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
And, you know, real quick, we talked about, you know, having these podcasts. One of the main, the number one opportunity that it gives you is that people fall in love with you first and then your business comes second. They want to do business with you because of you.
Right.
And that's exactly what's happening here.
Right.
You know, we are getting to meet you.
Right.
And
that's the power of organic content.
That's the power of organic content.
You know, just believe in this so much.
Which is even a better fit because in my world, I am the product, basically.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's the same in our industry, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good sales.
Absolutely.
It really transcends everything. It's, you know, one of the reasons we're doing that. And it's just such a better experience for all parties, you know.
Yep.
Not only do you get an audience or a customer base that wants to do business with you, but you get a more educated customer base.
Yep.
So many of the common questions that folks get in their business, folks are coming in the door already knowing the answers, and
which is awesome because it accelerates the whole process.
Right.
Yeah. And now I remember where I was going with that, which is with what you do with business consulting, it sounds like you have to kind of fall in love with the person before you work with them, right?
Oh, it's a two-way street.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it's the same kind of deal with your podcast, Operations Excellence, that they're going to get to fall in love with you first, and then they get your great expertise, you know, with that. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's about building trust. You want
100%.
To trust. 100%.
100%. Yep.
That's it.